And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition to Hear That Podcast Growling. Paul Adrian Jr. of The Athletic here with you. Presented by Visa or Network Working for You. It's just me. And it threw me off right off the top because I'm used to introducing Jay Morrison. But Jay is, of course, busy like listening to Seether and Breaking Benjamin and Five Finger Death Punch and every other hard metal band you could imagine somewhere around Florida. Jay's just living his best life right now. God bless him. So he is not here with us this week on his vacation. But I am here. We had the first kind of the public debut of the 2022 Bengals with the first kind of phase two OTA that had the entire team back together on the football field with us able to watch practice. Joe Burrow at the podium, open locker room. Thank you, Bengals. Afterwards, with a chance to catch up with people we haven't talked to since before the Super Bowl. So there was a lot to kind of unpack there. So, for that, I wanted to bring in an old friend, a good friend, Richard Skinner of Local 12, the Skinny Podcast, which he does with Rick Boring, which is fantastic. One of my favorite listens during the week. And Skinny and I, of course, we actually worked together specifically on the beat together my first full year back in 2014. And of course, we've been great friends ever since and working alongside of each other. And so it's good to reunite with Skinny on the podcast. We'll get to that with him to react to all things kind of going on with the Bengals, including Ring of Honor. Talk a lot about Jesse Bates. We're going to talk about things that Burrow said, where this team is at right now going forward. And of course, if I have Skinny on, I got to do some gambling hot takes, right? We got to get in some gambling thoughts. And I kind of want to press him on his general frustration he has with Bitcoin because I find it funny. We'll get to that first. What I want to bring you is a little bit of Joe Burrow. And Burrow talked at the podium for about 15 minutes on Tuesday. And so just a chance to talk to him. I asked him about the crackers because I'm here for Big J journalism. People wondering what kind of crackers they were. But it was kind of in a trying to soften it up a little bit for actually what I thought was a really important answer. But there's a lot of other stuff in there, too, in Burrow talking about the final play of the Super Bowl, his approach to the offseason, how he watched the Super Bowl afterwards, and his knee brace, a number of other things. But I want to give you a bunch of Joe Burrow here, some of the highlights from his 15-minute session with reporters. And after that, we'll come back. And I'll be joined by Richard Skinner of Local 12. So here is Joe Burrow on the podium Tuesday.
We haven't gotten a chance to talk to you about the new offensive linemen. You have apparently played a pretty big role in them all landing here. Can you just tell us how excited you are about the additions you guys made up front?
Yeah, they've been great so far. Really taking ownership of what they need to do to understand the offense coming out here and giving everything they have during, you know, the little OTAs that were, or whatever you want to call them, individual periods that were happening. And, you know, they've been great in the weight room, great in the locker room. They've been exactly what we've wanted.
Elson mentioned that during his trip in, you had him over the house and cupcakes and crackers were serving. There was some speculation on what exactly did that entail?
You know, we just had some snacks. So it was just some snacks.
What kind of crackers were they?
I guess I don't remember. You know, that was a while ago, but we definitely made sure that they had some snacks to eat.
What was that like for you having them? I mean, that being a part of that, and recruitment is the right word, but having them over, and what did that mean for you to be able to be a part of that?
Yeah, that's something that, you know, I want to do every year, make sure that the guys that we're looking to bring in feel at home in Cincinnati and with the team, because that's the culture that we're building in the locker room. We, you know, we're really, really close as a team, coaching staff, players, strength staff, trainers. And so I just want to kind of portray that to the guys that are thinking about coming here and that we want to sign.
Joe, one of the cliches in football in the NFL is each time this year you're starting from scratch. Even if you went to a Super Bowl last year, you're starting at ground zero. Do you feel that way as a quarterback?
No record. I mean, going into the season, everyone's starting from scratch, but we've also worked really hard to build this culture that we've built the last couple of years that has enabled us to have the success that we did last year. And so, I mean, technically, yes, but, you know, as far as the grinding and the work that we put in to build the culture, you know, we're looking to carry that momentum from last year into this year.
How would you describe the foundation you personally have built as a leader?
You know, it's not just me. It's, you know, all the leaders of the team, the coaching staff, Zach. You know, I think what I try to do as a leader is listen really hard to what Zach has to say to the team, and, you know, then take my spin of it and try to. I think that's the quarterback's job, is to portray the message that the head coach is bringing down and trickle it amongst the locker room.
It's a very different off season this year. How do you feel? All the bumps and bruises healed? Are you 100%?
Yeah, I mean, I feel great. Obviously, this is my first off season in the NFL, so I've, you know, been able to take advantage of that with, as far as my body and my throwing and my mind and all that. It's been, you know, obviously I've been grinding, but it's also been relaxing, not have to worry about, am I going to be ready for the season? I can just focus on, you know, getting my body right, making sure I'm healthy, and then relaxing.
Last it was rehab, and it was the deep ball. What's your main thing you're focused on improving this offseason?
And really, it's just my entire game at this point. You know, I'm tweaking little things here and there, and, you know, at this point, I'm not going to have a big overhaul of anything that I'm doing. I'm just looking to refine, you know, my entire game as a whole.
Is practicing without a knee brace significant?
Yeah, it's fun. I don't really like wearing that thing, so it's good to have that off.
Do you think you'll play with one, or is that a thing of the past?
To be determined. Maybe I don't anticipate wearing it, but maybe you get to game day and, you know, feel a little more comfortable having it on, so we'll see.
Do you anticipate big changes to the offense? Do you anticipate just tweaks, the things that went well? Is it too early to start that process? Have you guys already started that process?
I think we're going to completely overhaul the offense. We're going to, you know, maybe run the wing tee a little bit this year. So maybe our division can start, you know, watching some Georgia Tech or something.
With the offensive line, though, do you think there'll be different areas of the field you'll be able to attack differently with improvements up front?
Yeah, we'll see going into camp. You know, it's early to tell. You know, I'm going into it expecting that we can kind of open it up a little bit and, you know, maybe throw some things in that we weren't able to do last year and the year before. But, you know, we'll see. We have a really good core group of plays that, you know, we know really well and that we're good at, so we're not going to abandon that.
A couple of your new offensive linemen won Super Bowls with Brady. Will you pick their brains about him? Have you picked their brains about him?
I haven't. I'm, you know, I try to take things here and there from different people, but I'm, you know, really focused on refining my routine and everything that I do to be the best me. And I don't think I could take something that makes Tom Brady great that might not make Joe Burrow great. And so maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. You know, I listen and study all of these things, and, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I try a lot of different things, but, you know, going down the stretch to the season, you know, talk and think about all the things that you worked on in the offseason, you throw some out because you think, I don't have time to really refine this to get it ready to go by the season. And so some things will stick and some things won't.
Well, Joe, at what point, how much time did you have to have before you felt totally unencumbered with any kind of nagging injury? Were you able to really attack your offseason conditioning? And now that you've been able to do it, do you feel like you're as good as you've ever felt?
Yeah, it was. I gave myself about a week to recover. I didn't do much for about a week, and then I was back at it. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that wants to take a month off and sit on the couch and watch TV and get fat and all that. I'm happier when I'm working out, and, you know, that's what I do for fun. And so, you know, we got right back at it.
What gives y'all the biggest confidence, you specifically the biggest confidence, that you guys can go back and repeat
You know, we have the experience now. You know, going into it last year, we knew we were good, but I think going into the playoffs, you know, we knew we could win, but we weren't really sure what it took. We just kind of went out there and played really hard and together as a team, and, you know, it worked out. Now we know what it takes. We have that experience in our back pockets going forward.
Have you watched the Super Bowl? And if so, how long did it take you to watch?
Yeah, I watched it the next day. You know, like I said, I just treated it like any other game week that week after, apart from, I guess I did get a couple lifts in that week, but you know, nothing crazy. I watched it the day after and saw the things I need to improve and things we did well, and you know, moved on.
Not to open up wounds, but the last play of the Super Bowl, there's a shot of Jamar running and Ramsey on the ground. Is that the stuff that sits with you? Is that, did you see that, and your thoughts on maybe that play?
Yeah, I checked that go route. I was anticipating throwing it, just, you know, didn't quite have the time. So, like I said, we put this behind us. You know, we lost. We had a great year. We're going forward.
I know you're not a big social media guy, probably not on Twitter as much as all of us. So how do you find out the news of if you guys sign someone? Do you get direct text messages from Zach Taylor, or do you see it on Twitter?
So I re-downloaded Twitter for free agency so I can stay up to date because I don't know how else to see all that news, like you said. So I'm pretty behind on a lot of things because I'm not on there much.
All right, now I am very excited. It's a reunion of sorts. Although honestly, it doesn't feel that way because Skinny, I talk to you more than I do most people in my life. Richard Skinner of Local 12, the Skinny Podcast, good friend of the program. What's going on, buddy?
How you doing, man? Yeah, you know, we started on the beat. We only worked on the beat together for a year, but then we kind of stayed in the same working room after that. So it really didn't feel like we ever separated.
And when you gamble intently against each other,
yes,
every single year, it's hard to get away from it. It engulfs you, you know, and that's why I feel like it's been so fun. We do love to have a good time for entertainment purposes only, of course.
Yeah, I will say
as we cover this team.
Yeah, many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, when we had one of our yearly bets, you and I, we had to sit through a national anthem as we watched the end of a game that decided the fate of both of us. And it was the craziest thing to try to honor America and at the same time trying to pay attention and homage to our bet that I eked out by the skin of my teeth.
In a game, I don't, like, honestly, I could do a full rewatch of that Jaguars 49ers game because I needed the Jags to get one more win on the season to win a precinct dinner, and they just couldn't do it. And like 5 tries and Blake Bortles. Remember, there was an interception right before halftime where a dude got tackled like on the 1 yard yes. line trying to score, and then Blake Bortles overthrew Allen Robinson during the said national anthem.
Wide
I think
open
it wasn't
Allen
against
Robinson.
San Francisco. We were in San Francisco, yeah. And I just remember thinking, I cannot believe he just overthrew. It was the game. It was the bet. And I'm just trying to hold it in honor America. Yeah. hence, hashtag That's So Jaggy has been around ever since. So it's a good time. Well, I have gambling stuff for us to get to, of course. I can't have you on here for us to not dive into a little bit of the gambling element. But first, you know, we just heard from Joe Burrow here, and I want to kind of process a few things that he said or that we heard in, it was so great to return to, by the way, the open locker room yesterday. I'll let you start it off. Did you have anything that stood out to you from what Joe Burrow said?
Yeah, I thought Jamar Chase talking about the play, right? The play at the end of the Super Bowl. That was a bit fascinating to me. All of those things. So to me, that those two guys talking separately and independently of the Super Bowl final play was just, I thought that was great stuff.
Yeah, you know, I had heard before about the idea that Burrow had checked to the go ball, and when I originally heard that, I just thought to myself, can we play that out for a second, Skinny? Like, dare we play out the alternative reality?
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's 4th and 1. Burrow as at the line, gives eyes to Jamar Chase, checks to a go ball against Jalen Ramsey against press coverage, drops back, has 2.5 seconds to throw, launches a ball that we've seen him throw dozens of times successfully,
Wouldn't have even had to be
over the course of the season. And Ramsey falls down. Chase catches it, waltzes into the end zone for the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. It goes down as one of the great plays in the history of NFL.
No question.
I mean the situation, the cojones it would take to throw the go ball on fourth and one, the beating of Jalen Ramsey, who'd been hyped up to an nth degree, and the coronation of Burrow to Chase. What could have been? I'm sorry, Bengals fans. I hate to even talk about it, but is that not just the ultimate insight to the psyche of Joe Burrow? There is no moment that he does not love and will not call the absolute ballsiest move available to him, no matter Super Bowl or not.
Yeah, and just the fact of that whole chemistry conversation of those guys from LSU staying on the same page in their first year, and all it took was eye contact between them, right? There was no set call. Now, they knew press coverage, hey, that's usually going to be the check if he's going to check, but they just made eye contact and just knew that was the moment for them. And man, you're right. What could have been if somehow someone had decided to block Aaron Donald, which is never easy.
Yeah, you got to block Aaron Donald. That's the hard part. And that's kind of the part of the check too, right? I mean, of you're bringing that into play if you're really trying to do that. But I don't want to torture Bengals fans here. We're not here to do that. But it was interesting to hear that kind of discuss. I mean, the thing is, that's the thing. We haven't talked to almost any of these guys even since before the Super Bowl. Chase included, who was able to talk about some of his views of the Super Bowl. And I just think, you know, the whole concept of how this team will process the Super Bowl loss is kind of fascinating to me. And I think you're starting now to get a little bit of insight. And I got to tell you, the whole, like, everybody assuming it's a fluke thing, it just plays right into their hands. They can just feed off the same stuff that kind of fueled last year, which was the disrespect, nobody believes in us card. They can almost keep playing this again, even though they were just in the Super Bowl in February.
Yeah, and I'm never a big believer in that card, but you know what? Players sometimes are. And if that's what fuels you, you know, good for you. I'm always get tired of the disrespect and nobody respects us. Well, yeah, I'll give you that last year, but you go to the Super Bowl, people know who you are, but it does. It feeds right into what they want. Mike Hilton, one of the first guys we talked to this offseason, right? He was the one that brought it up. We ain't no fluke. We're going to be in primetime a bunch. I mean, I think these guys are embracing that moment for sure.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The other thing, you know, Burrow's maybe not going to wear the brace. He didn't want the brace from the beginning.
Right.
Like, in the very beginning, he was against the brace. So it's not like that's new. I don't know that that's an evolution. Do you take a side in the brace debate?
No, I think there's a symbolism to it, though, right? That's maybe like the final hurdle to go, hey, he's okay. You know, you see him in the brace last year, and it still is, boy, I hope he doesn't get hit. And then the pinky came into play and some of that. But I think there's a little symbolism to it. And maybe for him, too, that he gets to not wear it. And he talked about maybe during the season he might even go back to wearing it. But for now, I think it's a symbolic thing, sure.
Yeah, great. I really have no – I feel like people want to have a strong opinion on everything. And my opinion is whatever Joe Burrow would like to do with his brace is fine with me. Like, this is about him being mentally and emotionally and physically comfortable out there. Then whatever he'd like to do, okay. Like, why do I have to have an opinion on this?
Yeah, you know? I think he did take umbrage at your question of his choice of snacks for Lael Collins' visit. And yeah. we never got confirmation of what, because initially all Lael said was cupcakes and crackers, which sounds like the strangest combination of snacks in the history of snacks. And I was waiting for, yeah, there was pepperoni slices with it, and we had a little cheese selection and some really good red wine. I think it really was. He might have opened a box of Zestas and some Kroger-bought cupcakes and go, here's snacks.
Yeah. I just wanted to know, club, Triscuits?
Right.
Right. What do we talk? Oysters? I mean, I don't know. We could be totally off the board here. But, you know, here's the thing about that. And I actually, somebody was texting me a joke about that the other day about, you know, capital J journalism, right? The thing is, like, those settings, Burrow wants to be lighthearted.
Yes.
He wants to joke around. Like, and there's often such a barrage of serious questions. And I get it. Like, there are questions you need to ask the quarterback, and there's lots of stuff. But I feel like anytime you can loosen him up a little bit, he really embraces that, and it helps. And I thought, you know, it ends up with a great answer of him taking ownership of the recruiting process that I thought was really an important piece of what he's become for them. You know, I mean, this whole idea of him saying every year, I want to be the one to be the welcoming committee, to show them what we've got going on here, to anybody that we want to come in. I want to be the face that brings them in. I mean, that means a lot, and it says a lot to how they're going to continue to build this thing around him going forward.
Yeah, and he has to be the centerpiece of that, right? But at the same time, you need him to embrace it, and he obviously does. I mean, it's one thing, the quarterback's always the centerpiece, always the focal point of that stuff, but some guys may not be comfortable as the recruiter. He seems not only comfortable, he seems to love that part of the process, because in a way, he gets to determine, is this a teammate I want, right? I mean, he can maybe tell management, hey, that visit was terrible. I know he can play maybe, but I don't know if I want this guy. And he signed off on all these guys already, but I think he's an important part of that, and him signing off is an important part of it.
Well, and there's levels to this, right? I mean, there's here's Matt Ryan sending a text, or Andy Dalton sending a text, or any quarterback, Aaron Rodgers doing a FaceTime call, right? And then there's, hey, you're in town, let's come over and spend the night together. Right. There's levels to it that show you take it more seriously, that you care more about it, that it and maybe that will go away with time. Personally, with kind of what we've known of him, I don't think that it will, but I think you got to appreciate the levels that he's got there.
No doubt. One thing I wanted to do, Paul, and I just don't know how I'm going to go about this analytically. I did want to build a story around his quote about changing the offense to the wing tee.
Yeah.
I want to see Joe Burrow come down the line running the option play this year.
Absolutely. You know, hire Paul Johnson, right?
Yes, like, yes, Paul Johnson.
Bring Paul Johnson up from Georgia Tech, as he mentioned, and just get him to work side by side with Brian Callahan and Frank Pollock, and really institute those principles. Could you imagine a scenario? I mean, people hold their breath if he scrambles.
Correct.
Much less he's out here like, who would be the best? Tommy Frazier, best wing tee quarterback of all time.
Yeah, he's in the Scott Frost in that conversation.
Yeah. who is the guy for Notre Dame?
Way back in the day, Tom Clements was a great wing tee quarterback.
90s, that's early 90s.
Tony Rice was great at it, for sure.
I think that's a good question for everyone to have to answer. If you have an answer, who is the best wing tee quarterback ever? Or we'll say, not. I don't want to hear like, well, in the Dayton Triangles or the Los Angeles Dons. I mean, fairly modern day. Let's say since I've been alive, 1980 on. I don't want you to go all the way back to Skinny's era in the 40s.
It's the 70s, in case.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
It's the 70s. I will say, Jamar Chase is a trailback in the wing tee, catching a pitch, might be a tad bit dangerous.
Yeah, it could be a scary element to insert if they had a running quarterback that could come in Burrow's place. But then that means you have to take Joe Burrow off the field.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
That's advisable.
No, well, thank you.
Should we talk? Let's talk about Jesse Bates.
Got to.
This has somehow devolved. I'm writing about this now, and I am too. Yeah, it's hard not to.
It's hard not to, yes.
But it's like, this is somehow, the first time I talked to Jesse Bates about his contract was for a story that posted on December 20th of 2020. And he talked openly about his desire to be here, what it means to him. His history is kind of really being invested in the business side of the NFL and how easy this should be. And it's just remarkable that we have come and we're still talking about this 515 days later, and with no I mean, I guess there is an end in sight, but it just somehow has gotten worse and it's still an issue. And it's just, I know everybody wants to play the blame game, but it's just, to me, this is going to come down to one thing, Skinny, and correct me if you think I'm wrong. Jesse Bates himself, and only himself, is going to have to answer one question. Are you willing to punt $13 million?
No, I think that's exactly what it comes
down to. That's it. That's what this is.
And that's the part here, because we all want a villain when we have contract negotiations, right? Either the player's too greedy or ownership's too cheap. In this case, it's neither of those things. It's a player who thinks he's one of the top safeties in the league, and maybe analytically he is, and wants to be paid accordingly. And it's a team that can't pay everybody, right? I mean, they can't pay them all. And so you have to make sometimes tough choices in this regard. And so I think they have a price point. He has a price point. I don't think the sides are ever going to get to the point where they get that price point met for a long-term extension. But you have the ability, thanks to collective bargaining, to put a franchise tag on a player. He's going to make $13 million guaranteed. Maybe he makes business decisions in games, Paul, and that's certainly worth looking at down the road. But I don't believe Jesse Bates punts $13 million. I think it's really easy for his side, if it's true, because there's a report that he says he's not going to sign the franchise tag. That's easy for them to say on May 17th, right? Because he wasn't coming to OTAs anyway. It's not mandatory. There's no mandatory minicamp. He'll sign the franchise tag, in my opinion, in play. And then hopefully play well and probably not be paid here. He'll be paid handsomely elsewhere, in my opinion.
Yes, I think that's where this ends up. And this is, and it's the impression that I get is that this is just a matter of, okay, I don't like doing this, but it does feel like, just knowing what we've heard from Jesse over the years, that this is the agent pushing really hard to try to angle this thing and put the Bengals in a corner and exert leverage before this deadline of July 15th with these types of threats. I mean, he is the agent, was for Deshaun Watson, for Jalen Ramsey, Watson, who obviously had all his issues, but sat as an active member just standing on the side all year last year. Jalen Ramsey, who essentially faked an injury to get a trade out of Jacksonville. I mean, we've seen, there's just the history exists here of taking kind of the nuclear option, if you will. And I don't like using that term right now either, but going that route. And this feels like a part of that. And at the end of the day, that's why I say Jesse Bates has to make the decision. He has to make the decision of if that's really something he wants to do. And the thing is, you can sit out training camp. You can sit out whatever you want to. That's fine. At the end of the day, you have to make that one decision of you're going to hit the free market next year anyway. Would you rather do it having already made $13 million or not? Yes, there's risk. Yes, you're betting on yourself. But, to me, I don't know. I have a hard time sneezing at $13 million, and to me, that's what this will eventually end up coming down to.
And the guy made 4.8 over his first 4-year rookie contract, right? So you're talking about pretty life changing money for a year.
No doubt.
That's hard to turn out. I'm with you. And like I said, it's very easy for his camp, and this is not him, I don't believe, his camp, to posture the way they're posturing because he wasn't coming to OTAs anyway. So go ahead and make the threat, right?
Yeah. I mean, all it does is try to shake the tree.
Yeah, you know? It's not gonna.
No, let's be honest. There is a long, long history of people trying to shake Mike Brown and Katie Blackburn's tree to no avail, and to it going the opposite way. Honestly, I worry more about that for him.
Yeah, dude, and they
this is gonna have the opposite effect you think it's gonna have.
And they wasted no time planting Dax Hill in that spot yesterday.
No, I mean that's the visual of it. Like, it was no surprise. It was what you would expect to happen. There is zero shock involved. However, the visual of Jesse's not here. There's the first round pick. That's just it. You have, like, the thought of making these types of threat is exerting your leverage. He has no leverage. The cards have been played. They have made a first round pick your position. All they do is slide the first round pick into play right next to Von Bell. It's not. And oh, by the way, drafted Tyson Anderson later in the draft to another safety. So it's not like, that he's really pushing them in a spot where they're freaking out without any answers. The cards have been played. The pass have been taken. It's going to end up either Jesse Bates decides that he's willing to do this or He doesn't, and both teams go about their way, whatever that decision is.
And I know players get mad about the franchise tag, and they threaten this a lot of times, but more times than not, they wind up signing it. And I always use the argument, go back to your union, tell them you don't like this. I mean, teams are allowed to do it, and it's not like they're cheapening. This is 13 mil. He's making three times in 1 year what he made his first 4 years in the league. He'll be okay. I cross my fingers for no catastrophic injury. I cross my fingers he gets paid somewhere in his career because I think he's earned it. I just hate to tell Bengals fans, it's not going to be here. They got too many dudes to pay.
And here's the thing. I mean, you worry about it. What there is catastrophic injury, but there are, it's so hard to have an injury anymore that is truly
correct.
This is a value destruction. Sure, it can happen, right? But he's young. He's so young.
No, right.
It's not like we're talking about a 30-year-old guy who just popped an Achilles. You know, there's really nothing that I think that would truly destroy his value. Now, it can change things a little bit, but there's no guarantees even in your guaranteed contract that you think you're going to sign next year if you sit out, that you're going to collect more than even whatever it is. And I get it. I want these guys to get what they feel like they deserve. But, you know, there's a certain point where you got to make decisions of whether you're what you're willing to do or not. And I just, there's no guarantees in anything, even the long-term contract that you sign, no matter how much guaranteed money you think you're going to get. And maybe he'll say, look, I can get $30 million guaranteed by sitting out, and that's what I'm going to focus on doing, is getting that $30 million whenever that's available to me. Maybe. Will that still be available to you in March after you made a decision to sit out for a year is another part of that decision too.
I just don't see him sitting out. I can't give Bengals fans guarantee because I'm not Jesse Bates. I just don't see him sitting out.
The only thing we know now is it's a little bit murkier, and we'll just continue to wait till July 15th. Because from that point forward, I mean, that's all it is that decision, because
right.
That's all that can happen is he can play this year on the franchise tag. And that's it. Outside of that, though, attendance was good. You know, Trey Hendrickson not there for TBD. The reasoning given by Zac Taylor was basically, you know, every guys have their different routines or whatever. Some will be in and out, I think he said.
Here's why I think Trey Hendrickson wasn't there. Do you want to know why I think he wasn't there?
Why?
Because he's not allowed to sack a quarterback yet.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's all that matters. Can't touch him. I'll say this. I do think that you know, the fact that everyone else was there was a good sign. We sort of wondered as they pushed everything back. Like, okay, is there some thought that like the offseason program is not going to have great attendance like last year? That was such a big deal, right? Like that was a big part. Everyone talked about that as the foundation of the Super Bowl. Are we going to see them just kind of blown up the whole thing and half people don't even show up? And there's everyone except for really one you expected and the other one that's like, whatever, he'll
correct.
Be here. You know, I think that actually was a pretty encouraging thing, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, T. Higgins is not going to be back till training camp, and there he was watching drills take place, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
I genuinely think, and that's the first time, Paul, we've been in the locker room in 2+ years, right? I generally think there is a feel to that locker room where these guys like being around each other.
Yeah. No, I think that's real. I mean, you do get it, again, you're right. We've been in there one day now. But we heard so much of that last year. I think it's obvious. I think they love what's going on. That's part of the reason with the Bates thing, like the other side that people talk about was, is this going to become something that you know, goes throughout the locker room and is poisonous? Yeah, Mike Hilton and the DBs are all, there's a lot of extend Jesse Bates yelling that. I think people also understand there's a business to this and aren't really interested in getting in other people's business in that respect too much and letting that affect them. I think that will never trump. I don't know. I like these guys, right? I like coming to work every day. I like this team. I like playing with this group. I want to go win a Super Bowl. I don't think that is something that's going to change the way these players view this locker room.
Yeah, I talked to Mike a little bit about it yesterday. He obviously is pro Jesse Bates, but he also said, man, I get the business. They're allowed to franchise tag him. It is what it is. I just hope, you know, he doesn't get hurt in the interim, but Mike gets it. Mike's a veteran. He understands both sides of it. So, yeah, and that's where, the other thing that stood out to me yesterday is, and maybe because we covered losing teams the last handful of years when the locker room was open, how many guys used to scatter and how few guys it felt like scattered yesterday, right? They all seem to kind of hang around and hang around chatting with each other. Usually they're avoiding us like the plague, especially when you're losing. And yesterday seemed like guys wanted to kind of hang around with each other.
Yeah, how about that? You know, and good for them, you know? I mean, they want to hang around us, but
I don't think that's the case. It ain't us.
It ain't us. I like hanging around us.
Yeah, I do like hanging around us.
Let's go into one other thing here. The Ring of Honor is out. This is always a fun little conversation. The Ring of Honor, two more players will be inducted in, and this is going to be a fan vote. Again, same as last year, season ticket holders and all that stuff. Last year felt easy, almost. You know, I mean, we knew Paul Brown, Anthony Munoz, obviously, and then Ken Anderson and Ken Riley, the Kens. I mean, the overdue nature of them and how they should be getting in, hopefully will very soon here with the senior committee, I think made it feel – I made an argument for somebody we'll get into in a second last year, but I do think it made it relatively easy. This, picking two more out of the remaining group, I think is very – very challenging. I'm curious how what you think.
Yeah, I've got it narrowed down to four for me, and then I'll give you the two that I would go ahead and vote for. I'm going to write a column on this too. The four for me that I got it narrowed down to are Willie Anderson, Chad Johnson, Lamar Parrish, and Corey Dillon, with James Brooks just on the outside and Isaac Curtis just on the outside. And if I was going to vote for my two, it would be Willie Anderson, who arguably should be in the Hall of Fame and may soon be one day. And I'll be honest, Paul, and this comes from my era, Lamar Parrish was a better player than Ken Riley. And I don't say that to desecrate Ken Riley. Lamar Parrish was an all-decade selection from Pro Football Reference, all-decade selection at cornerback of the 1970s. Six Pro Bowls with the Bengals. He was a great punt and kick returner. 13 non-defensive touchdowns, ranks fifth all-time. And the reason he didn't have the interceptions Ken Riley had, people didn't throw at Lamar Parrish. And so, to me, those are my two guys. But boy, I can really make a case for Corey Dillon and Chad Johnson, because they both are borderline Hall of Fame cases. If not, honestly, for Corey Dillon, a solid Hall of Fame case.
Yeah, I think Chad, he just meant so much to the totality of the franchise in the most dramatic turnaround, pulling them out of the ultimate low point for any franchise in, honestly, North American sports. And just the way he changed the entire dynamic of the franchise, who he was as a player, who he was as a personality, what he just means in general, I have a hard time keeping him out. And I feel like Willie is the one and Chad is the two. But I have a hard time. Isaac Curtis changed the way the NFL was played, and he's just so underrated in the big picture of things. And I think he does get a little bit overlooked. Dillon, the hard part for me is I think Dillon's Hall of Fame case is absolutely real, and it's despicable that he's never really been in the conversation, but a massive chip of that case is what he did in New England. And so I have a harder time with that here. Not that it wasn't great. I mean, 246 as a rookie, 278, the overall totality of 10,000 plus yards and 4.2 yards per carry and everything he did. Don't get me wrong. But the fact so much of his Hall of Fame case as a whole came in New England, I think gives me the little bit to say that it should be Chad and Willie here, kind of celebrating the 2000s renaissance that was so impactful to everybody.
Yeah, and my case for Lamar Parrish is the one I would stump for, only because I'd hate to see what happened to Ken Riley happen to him, where he doesn't get a chance to enjoy it when eventually Lamar Parrish is getting into this thing, and it's probably sooner rather than later. I that's why I stumped for 10 originally when I wrote a couple of columns that especially some of these guys in their 70s, let them enjoy it. I get why they did it. I'm glad they're doing it again this year. I honestly didn't know when the next one they were going to do was, Paul, to be honest with you. But if they keep doing this year to year to year, hopefully we get the vast majority of these guys in while they can still enjoy it.
I will point out something that Mo Egger said on the show that I was with him yesterday on ESPN 1530, is that they should take one out of the fans' hands and just put Dave Beckham up there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fair to put him as a player next to some of these guys, but what he has meant organizationally, there is, you're not going to find anybody greater. You're not going to find anybody that's more about the Bengals and dedicated themselves, their life to the Bengals than him. And I mean, we're talking about all the way back to the early 70s and still here as a centerpiece, arguably maybe the one of the most influential members of the organization. And that needs to be recognized and recognized fast, and not because we have to compare him to Max Montoya as a guard. That's not fair. And so I agree with Mo in his opinion on this that he was talking about.
I do too. And he also was a good player. I guess a good enough player, but you got to take the totality of it. The totality of it is he is Mr. Bengal after all.
Well, I'm glad we got Ring of Honor talk in. There will be plenty of time for people to get there and vote. All right, let's just take a quick break. All right, we got to get some gambling here for you. I've got some, I'm curious your thoughts on this. All right. Odds. BetMGM has the schedule's out, all our season odds and things like that. To win the AFC, the Bengals are plus 1,100, the Ravens are plus 1,100, and the Browns are plus 900. I'm curious what you would order those three if you were putting money down.
I think the value of the Bengals is the best value of all of them. I'd go Bengals, Ravens, Browns. I don't like the value of the Browns at plus 900 because you don't know the situation with Deshaun Watson. And even if he plays, I don't know that they're better than the Bengals. And the Ravens, a lot of it hinges on health of Lamar Jackson. And I don't know moving forward how sustainable that is. So I think I'd take the Bengals at plus 1,100 first.
Yeah, I think that the value aspect of this is interesting. Even the general value against the Bengals, the team that's the defending AFC champion that had a good offseason, as a whole, I mean, is really quite remarkable. Although to win the AFC North, BetMGM has all of them at those three teams at plus 200, with the Steelers at plus 900, and I would say, while you think you're getting good value, betting on Mitch Trubisky is not a way you want to enjoy the 2022 season.
Not a chance. No, thank you for that. I will wave the flag at that one. Good luck to the Mitch Trubisky turning into Kenny Pickett era.
Yeah. I don't know if you've looked at the MVP odds, but I wonder if you can guess the order of these five quarterbacks in the MVP odds. You think you can do it?
I think I can. We'll see.
Okay, here we go. Here's the five I'm going to give you. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Justin Herbert. What do you think the order is of the odds from best to worst?
Best to worst. I'll go Justin Herbert has the smallest odds.
That's correct.
I'll go Joe Burrow second smallest odds.
Correct.
I'll go Russ Bus third lowest odds.
Yep.
Then I'll go Lamar Deshaun.
Look at you. You are a true pros pro, Richie.
And I have not looked at those odds yet, to be honest with you.
It felt like you had just set me up and you were ripping them off. Justin Herbert at plus 1,000, Burrow at plus 1,200, Russ at plus 1,400, Lamar back at plus 2,000, and Watson at plus 2,500. You wanna know what the pick for icky bet of the year would be? Putting money down on Deshaun Watson to win a comeback player of the year. Comeback from what?
From your own demise.
From your own demise? Like, talk about things that you don't want to be rooting for. And I don't think voters would ever actually vote for. Like, there's going to be a lot of people. Like, who casts that vote?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Nice comeback. What?
That would not be a good value bet because, like you said, even if he has this great year and somebody considers it a comeback, how in the hell does anybody really vote for that, right? You're not going to get any value from that play.
The same way I think he would have trouble with MVP, and which is why he's probably all the way back at 2,500. If you were putting money down out of one of these five, $10 that you had to put down on one of these five, or let's say 20, and you can split it up any way you want to amongst two of these five.
Yeah.
How about that? What would you do?
I'll put 15 bucks on Burrow and $5 on Russell Wilson. Because if Denver has success, he's going to get the credit for it, right? And depending on how far that success is, he's going to get the credit for it. But I think, Paul, you and I wrote and or talked about this last year. you could have really made a hell of a case for Joe Burrow as MVP last year. It wasn't going to happen because it happened so quickly, right? That he was not going to get that national buzz. But he's on a radar now. And so that's the part. He's Joe Burrow and all, but he wasn't on that MVP radar going into last season. It kind of evolved. Now he's on the radar. And so at double-digit odds, that's great value for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. I mean, if you look at who he was when they opened up the offense the second half of the year and who he was when he was fully comfortable with his knee and who he was in a clean pocket, which he'll have a much higher percentage of this year, theoretically. And he already, PFF had him as the number one graded quarterback in football over the course of the year. Yeah, it's hard to see how you wouldn't see great value in that. I think there's money to be placed on Lamar Jackson.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I don't think he's done. I don't think he's figured out. I think they were so decimated. They were asking Lamar. I think they also learned a little bit of things that they shouldn't be asking Lamar to do. I don't like the lack of receivers that he has.
He's got three tight ends.
He has great tight ends. Well, the thing is, there'll be two of them out there at all times, and they'll be out there running that offense where he can still use his legs plenty and still be scary with that and actually have guys to hand it to and actually have guys to block for him. That really is the core of everything that they do and still be able to throw that deep ball. I just think there's such an out of sight, out of mind to how good Jackson and the Ravens really were, because we're maybe holding last year against them and they had so many things working against them. At plus 2000, I just think if the Ravens have the comeback year people think they will, it'll be because Lamar Jackson refines himself. And I don't think that's as crazy as a possibility as people think, at least not at that number. So I would maybe go 10 on Burrow, 10 on Lamar.
That's fair enough. The only knock I would have on Lamar is I've always not believed in the sustainability of him being able to do this physically for a long period of time. The talent and the numbers when he's healthy that he's put up are just insane. But it just always has felt like all it's going to take is one time for him to lose some games and that ball starts rolling the other way as age starts to get up there. I just don't think the sustainability of a quarterback doing the things he does is real. And that's why I would not put the money on him. But I think your point's well made.
Thanks that I made a good point, even though you said it was a bad one. I appreciate that. and that does feel like that will somehow make some kind of a way into our 2022.
Oh, yes, it will.
Series of bets. Bengals primetime wins. I'm going to give you, I'll give you three options, but this is really about two. The Bengals are more likely to have four or more primetime wins of the five. I'm not counting flexes.
Yeah, right.
Or one or less.
Boy, I hate to say this. I'd go one or less because you got the three AFC North teams on the road. We don't know what Miami's going to look like. I mean, if they build an offense around Tua that works, they got a chance to be great. I mean, I count that as a Bengals win when you go down the schedule. And the Monday night game against Buffalo, you're arguably playing the best team on paper in the AFC if you're not the best team. So, I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. I think when I did a game-by-game projection, the silly exercise that we all do, when I did the game-by-game projection, I think I had them losing at Cleveland if Deshaun played, winning at Cleveland if they didn't. So I hedged my bet there, which is weak on my part. But I did have them losing the game at Pittsburgh. I do have them losing the revenge game for Baltimore at Baltimore. So there's two on paper right there. And I just have them winning the two home games just because of what the atmosphere is going to be like, et cetera. So, but based on the way you phrase this question, I'm going to lean more towards the one than losing or winning the one than winning the four or more.
Yeah, because even if you've got all your pieces, winning four is going to be hard.
Hard, right.
But if you're missing Chase or Burrow for a couple, and so many of those come in that same middle section there, that they could stack if you were not healthy or something was going against you at that point in the season, that it could kind of unravel quickly. So I would say amongst those two options, yeah, the obvious is that it'll probably be 3-2 or 2-3
right,
or something
right.
of that nature. But I found that interesting when you have to kind of wage the best case scenario versus the worst case scenario. All right. More importantly, the Preakness is this weekend, Skinny. Is there impropriety with Rich Strike? We know this, there was, he was juiced up, right?
I did think it odd that after what he did, that they said that the plan all along was to give him 5 weeks off. You didn't even know you were getting in the race. So what plan did you have to give the horse 5 weeks off?
And your horse tried to eat the pony. Okay. Your horse tried to eat the pony. He was all juiced up. He did something that's not possible for even an animal in the way he came back at the end of that race. And now all of a sudden there's no subjecting him to any more tests. I mean, you tell me, Skinny.
It's one of the most bizarre stories in the history of horses. I mean, I think the fact that the horse gets in the day before, you get a guy from Belterra Park here in Cincinnati riding, you know, cheap claimers that's riding the race of his life. You see, you know, two of the top choices neck and neck would look like it was going to be a great stretch rule. And all of a sudden you see this horse come from out of nowhere and you're like, was that Rosie Ruiz getting dropped in the Boston Marathon at like the 100-yard pole and just decided to run? I mean, where did you come from, dude?
I don't know. I think the horse was all on some kind of PED, some kind of horse whatever, and they don't know how the hell they didn't get positive tests off that, and they're like, we just got to disappear until we get some stud fees off this. Because exactly. There's no way we can get back in to any more races. How do you not try to get the Triple Crown?
Exactly.
How do you not even try?
Yeah, I know the argument can be made from horsemen sometimes of you're doing what's in the best interest of the horse. But like I said, I don't know about this five-week plan that you've talked about because you weren't even in the race to begin with. So when did the plan develop? Right after he got across the finish line, you went, crap, we gave him too much of the juice, Jim. Let's get him out of here.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want him to explode off the juice. Next thing you know, he's like having to get barbaroed on the turf. I mean, you know, nobody wants any of this. So that maybe that's what it is. But I don't know. I think complete impropriety, trying to cash in, get the stud fee after their big plan to juice up their horse. That's what I think.
No, that horse wanted to run around that track a second time, and I never see horses do that in a derby. They're exhausted.
All right, last one. What gets you angriest? Bitcoin, driving, or gambling bets gone awry?
I'm going to go gambling bets gone awry because when they start to go awry is when you feel just the dumbest you've ever felt in your life, right? Like, how could I not see that coming? Like in the Derby, for example, I was closing 9 horses in a pick 3. I ran 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th. And of course, my family then gives the whole, well, your name's Richard. How do you not put $5 on a horse called Rich Strike? Because that's not how I roll. But yes, now I am stupid for not doing that. You are right. There's nothing worse than watching that end of a game where you're laying 5.5 in a basketball game in an NCAA tournament and you're feeling really, really good until some little guy decides, I'm going to make a 3-pointer that doesn't matter. And he makes it and you're like, how stupid could I be to not buy the half point down? Why did I leave it at 5.5? Listen, I can get angry driving. I don't get angry at Bitcoin. I just have never understood it because I understand holding a dollar in my hand is real. I don't understand the whole cryptocurrency thing. So I don't get mad at it. I do get mad driving. There's no question about that. I'm not road rage guy. I just have certain principles I drive by. But there's nothing that makes you feel dumber than a bet gone awry.
That's true. And because then it makes you say things like, why do I even involve myself in this exercise in the first place?
Correct. Correct. What's the point? What was the point of me driving down to Belterra Park to make my pick 3 wager when the first 2 legs I got through, I'm sitting in a good piece of change. I'm counting. I'm like, hey, at the least I'm going to win $400 or $500 today. This is awesome. Until I don't.
And then you're sitting there out that money and you're at Belterra Park and you're around the infinite sadness that is what's happening around there. Others that are in your same plight. And you just wonder, how did I make so many decisions to leave me in this situation?
The little old lady who's very sweet, but then shows you, look, I had 2 to show on that horse. Shut up. Just shut up.
If you too would like to enjoy this emotional roller coaster with Skinny, you can show up at Belterra Park any night of the week.
I wouldn't go any night of the week. Twin Spires, Twin Spires account works for me quite well.
There you go. Skinny, thanks for crossing over. It was good to get back together in the podcast form once again. And I look forward. It should be known. I should go ahead and own up to this. You won our yearly 3-pronged wager.
And it should be noted,
the course of last year,
it came down to a tiebreaker on a Monday night football game. So we were about as close as
that. We had to invent the last week of the season, right? Because every single piece, we try to make it so it's impossible to tie. Every single piece had tied through the entire season that we had to come. Was it an over under on the Monday night football game?
Yeah, it was over under the last Monday night game. I think it was that was the Rams Niners, and you went with a crazy over number that gave me a wide window of opening there for the score to be what it wound up being.
Yeah, and so that put me having to take you out to the precinct, which is scheduled for right the day after the off-season program ends, and at that point we will start it all over again and reset for the next year. I'm already doing getting in my feelings for what I'm going to have to do to not be paying again this year.
No, I always look forward to the creativity you put together with these, Paul.
Yeah, we try to. It's all we've got.
It is all we've got.
It's all we've got. Skinny, thanks a lot. I hope everybody listens to the Skinny podcast over at Local 12, and he does with Rick Broering, which is fantastic stuff. Specifically, Ask Skinny Anything, which is just, it's a must listen for me in my rotation every single week just to hear what has you angriest. And I didn't get any old man moments of the week, which was one of our favorite bits from when we did the podcast together, but I think your Lamar Parrish rant might have qualified.
Yeah, I was trying to go down that road with my 1970s, all 1970s team, having watched Lamar Parrish, probably my favorite player growing up. So that's kind of my old man rant of I'm stumping for Lamar Parrish.
I don't have the old man 1940s music on file anymore, but we used to always play that under whatever your rants were.
Yes, yeah. People enjoy that.
All right, I appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, want to thank Skinny, Richard Skinner, for tapping in for Jay Morrison, who will be back next week with us on the podcast. And hope Jay is having a good time listening to Rat right now. Or maybe it's Warrant. I'm not sure who's up on stage C. But anyway, miss having Jay here. But Skinny was great filling in, and we'll be back with that next week. Reminder also, there were no winners on the Bengals schedule growler bet. Sorry, not even a so close. Nobody had Miami as the first primetime game. So sorry for everyone. Appreciate the participation, though. It was very nice to be back in the growler bet season. I'm sure we will come up with something else for you before too long. But thanks for participating in that. And with all that said, I'm out of here. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.